Haunted Night, live with Tamara Thorne and Alistair Cross.
First off, we would like to thank W.J. Pierce for creating and performing our music. Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Thorn and Cross Haunted Nights Live. We're your hosts. I'm Alistair Cross, and I'm here with my co-host and collaborator, Tamara Thorne. Thank you for joining us. Before we introduce tonight's guest, I'm going to turn it over to Tamara, who's going to tell you a little bit about what's going on the Thorn and Cross front.
Yeah, we've been spending all our time on Skype, but not writing together. We've been writing solo novels for a change, and they're both going to come out in the next few weeks. So my novel, Brimstone, is a coming-of-age story that takes place in 1968 in a little town called Brimstone in Arizona. The Brimstone Grand Hotel, owned by reclusive former movie star Delilah Devine, looms high on Hospital Hill, harboring long-buried family secrets that whisper of unimaginable horrors. Horrors that will echo down through generations. Within the walls of the Brimstone Grand, the past has come back to life, and Holly Tremaine and her grandmother Delilah are faced with an ancient familial evil that rages just below the old hotel's serene facade, an evil that won't rest until it possesses Holly, body, mind, and soul. And simultaneously, Alistair's new release, The Silver Dagger, book two in the Vampires of Crimson Cove series, picks up where the first novel, The Crimson Corset, leaves off. Life in Crimson Cove has been good to the Coulter brothers since Gretchen Van Treese was staked and her horde of vampires scattered. But when she rises from the grave, the brothers are torn apart, their lives and the peace between them shattered. Meanwhile, a serial killer is stalking the little mountain town, leaving a trail of blood that leads to a truth Sheriff Ethan Hunter doesn't want to face. The streets are no longer safe, nor are the forested paths. For a new and unknowable evil has come to Crimson Cove, and everyone, vampire and human alike, must come together in order to survive. Alistair?
Yes, and the first book in the Crimson Cove series is The Crimson Corset, and it's available at Amazon.com. And if you're into it and you want to learn more, you can also check out its companion novel, Darling Girls, which is not an exact sequel to The Crimson Corset, and it's also not exactly a sequel to Tamara's Candle Bay, but it features the vampires from both, and we wrote that one together. All right.
That's right.
Again, very quickly, you're listening to Thorn and Cross Haunted Nights Live. You can learn more about what we do at our websites, alistaircross.com and tamarathorne.com. You can visit our mutual blog at thornandcross.wordpress.com, or if you tweet, our handles are at crossalistair and at tamarathorne. You can also visit our Haunted Nights Live page on Facebook. For more information on the show, you can visit Authors on the Air on Facebook, Twitter, and at authorsontheair.com. This is a broadcast of the Authors on the Air Global Radio Network, LLC. All right, tonight we have a guest who I've heard a lot about over the years and very excited to have him. Owl Going Back has been writing professionally for over 30 years and is the author of numerous novels, children's books, screenplays, magazine articles, and short stories. He is a Bram Stoker Award winner, a Nebula Award nominee, and a Storytelling World Awards Honor recipient. His books include Crota, Darker Than Night, Evil Whispers, Breed, Shaman Moon, Eagle Feathers, and The Gift. Owl's short story collection, Tribal Screams, was published as a limited run in 2016 and recently republished to a larger audience. When not writing, Owl can be found investigating historic and haunted places throughout the country. He served in the United States Air Force, owned a restaurant and lounge, and worked as a cemetery caretaker. He's also a member of the Authors Guild, Science Fiction and Fantasy Writers of America, and the Horror Writers Association. His newest novel, which we're going to be talking about, called Coyote Rage, will be published in 2019, and I believe that's coming out in February. So we're right there. So without further ado, welcome to the show, Owl.
Welcome. Well, thank you, guys. Thank you for having me. That intro sounded so great. It's, you know, my kids call me a bomb. That sounded really good.
You sound really good. It's about time. I don't know how we managed to not have you on until now. We have
I'm the only one still walking around. I'm in Florida. Everybody else is by a fireplace under blankets. I'm the only one who can still get outside or get to a microphone.
Oh, no. I'm in Southern California. We're both okay.
Yeah.
But, man, it's like 60 degrees outside. That's freezing as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah. Same here. It's 60 here, and I'm wearing a sweatshirt and long pants. I'm freezing.
Yeah. I had to put socks on with my sandals. It's horrible.
Socks and sandals.
What? Oh, Alistair, don't make fun. You know I do that.
I won't.
He will, but that's why we love him. So you've got an awful lot of books out, and you've got a brand new novel coming soon. Can you tell us about
it? It's called Coyote Rage, and it's something very different for me because it's a dark fantasy, and it's a series. I've usually never done a series. I always do standalone novels. It's kind of like, imagine Lord of the Rings if it was set in a Native American universe. I'm drawing on a lot of Indian legends. Half the story takes place in modern times in this world, but half also takes place in the world of Galanlati, which is a Cherokee version of the world before ours. It's a sky world where all the animals and people existed, and the animals can talk. They all have the power of speech. They came to this world because it got too crowded there. So I'm bringing in little people. I've got giants. And basically, it's the Great Council meets once every 7 years in Galanlati with a representative of each species. And Coyote and Bear have decided to eliminate the human representation. And if they kill this person from attending, stop them from attending the council, then animals will take power again in this world.
That
oh, wow.
sounds great.
Nice.
Yeah,
I love
things
it.
Like this. Yes. Lord of the Rings
awesome.
And Native American, that really works for me.
There's a lot of fun stuff. Native American culture and folklore has been so neglected. I mean, there's so many wonderful stories about this country we live in. And I came across a passage about the Native American version of a shapeshifter, how they took their skin off and turned it fur side out or fur side in to change. I said, well, that's kind of fascinating. Sounds very painful. I said, I just got to work this version of the shapeshifters and the skinwalkers in.
Oh, yeah. You mentioned little people, and I had researched that for a couple of, you know, sort of elemental type things in a couple of books I've written. And tell us the Native American version of little people, if you can.
Little people are kind of mischievous little tribe. The Cherokee believes they still exist up in North Carolina. There's a Bald Mountain, which was the site of a battle where the little people took part. And they were caves that were found in Franklin County up in that area that were obviously man-made. They were artificially made, and they were so small that a person couldn't stand up inside, and they found small tools.
Oh, wow.
So the Indians have reported for years and years sightings of little people. They're still believed to exist in a valley out in South Dakota, where they hold a Sundance every year, and the Lakota people won't go down in this valley. So they're still believed to be amongst us, and they're you know, they're kind of mischievous. They also help out sometimes when people are lost in the forest. But they've been around in the stories and the storytelling for hundreds and hundreds of years.
Oh, I love that. This actually has basis in reality, too. That's unusual.
Mm-hmm.
I love that. Cool. Yeah.
One thing that I want to ask you about your short story collection, Tribal Screams. It says that the Coffee Shop of Horrors created an Owl Going Back's Tribal Screams roasted chestnut flavored coffee to tie in with the connection. Let's talk about that. That's great.
How
did that happen?
I have this wonderful cover art on the book and now on the coffee, too, which was done by Michael Broom, who is a Hollywood creature effects artist. He's worked on The Walking Dead. He's worked on Wolverine, The Crazy. He's just an amazing artist. They took one look at the artwork and fell in love with it like I did. I said, well, look, we need a flavor. So they came up with the roasted chestnut, and it was kind of interesting because the American chestnut tree is now extinct in America because it died of diseases when, you know, Europeans came over with brought other plants. They died out. Uh-huh. So all the chestnuts in this country are imports. So it's kind of like the native tribes. Many of them died out from disease. So we decided on a chestnut flavor. And it gives me a chance, like, you know, it's wonderful coffee. It really is. It's one of my favorites. Coffee Shop of Horrors does a lot of great flavors, but it's excellent. And then, like I said, I could be silly and joke with people that they can start their day off with a hot cup of me, or, you know, I'm good to the last drop kind of thing.
Uh-huh.
It ties in with the book, and it's nothing better than a good book and a hot cup of coffee, so I've got the best of both worlds
right now. Right.
Oh, that's great.
Now, you've been doing this for over 30 years. I'm curious as to what brought you here. How did you, tell us about your journey to publication. When did this all begin for you?
I dabbled with it in high school. We had creative writing classes and mystery literature classes, and I used to write stories for the other kids in class for their grades. But I put it aside, went into the military, and then opened up a restaurant and lounge. And one night after work, my wife and I were watching TV, and it was an interview with Stephen King. And she turns to me during the interview and said, "Why can't you be smart like him instead of so stupid?" Well, the whole male ego thing right there went through the roof. I said, "All right, I'll show you." And I sat down to prove that I could still write, and they say write about what you know, and I was involved in a martial arts, and so I wrote an article for a martial arts magazine, and they bought it. And I said, it has to be beginner's luck. It's got to be a fluke. I said, well, I'll write one more article. If they buy it, I'll continue writing. If they don't buy it, then I know it was a one-shot deal. Well, they bought the magazine article, and I continued writing and switched to fiction. And about 10 years, almost in a day of being called stupid by my wife and watching that interview with Stephen King, I was up against him for Best Book of the Year for the Bram Stoker Award.
Wow.
Nice, nice. Did you rub it in?
No, she still called me stupid. Yeah, I mean, it wouldn't be for her yelling at me. I probably would never get anything done. I mean, she's my biggest critic and my biggest person who drives me to do anything. Cause I'm like the laziest writer in the world otherwise.
Yeah, I understand.
Yeah.
Alistair keeps me moving.
Yeah, and she tells everybody
your wife
I'm a
also
slave
has
driver.
A...
I'm not.
Well, you keep me focused. You focus. Tamara, focus. Over here.
If it wasn't for the wife, I wouldn't have done Tribal Screams because she was the one that said you need to put your stories together because they were all in anthologies that had gone out of print. So she was the one that said you need to do this, and I didn't have anything on disc, so I had to sit there and retype every single story. Pick it on me.
Yeah.
That's a good thing, though. We need these people who do that. She also, Facebook, her banana bread is really popular. Every time I read that recipe, I think I got to get my husband to make that. I don't know how to cook.
She's baking right now in the kitchen. She's making pumpkin rolls as we talk. She's in there just made her third roll of the night. Yeah.
Oh, you eat well.
I do.
So you use a lot of Native American folklore. I'm curious. Do you? Mm-hmm. I think that's really cool because this is an avenue to carry this you know, these legends and this lore down. Do you feel, I wonder if there's a pressure there. Do you feel like you, any pressure to perpetuate the lore?
Well, it's kind of traditional storytelling. I don't consider myself a writer. I'm more of a storyteller. And using the Native American culture in my stories, it allows me to tell a story, and then I get to share the culture with what I'm writing. So I'm educating people whether they like it or not, because a lot of people won't pick up a nonfiction book. And because of what the Native American beliefs, like respect your elder and love the earth, the books are being used in reading programs around the country, including a program for youthful offenders at the Orange County Correctional Facility. I mean, the stories, people die in horrible ways like Crota. But, you know, the whole respect the land and the teachings are in there. That's why they picked up the books for the program.
Nice. That's cool.
Wow. That's wonderful. That must make you feel good.
It does, because these kids who are in jail for murder and all kinds of terrible things, they're all teenagers that did really stupid stuff, but nobody got to them before they messed up. And it's an 8-week course, and they read my book, and they write a report about it, and they take the course, and they keep their nose clean during this time, and they're rewarded by their families being allowed to come into the jail and bring a home-cooked meal. So if somebody reads my garbage and gets a home-cooked meal out of it while behind bars, I'm all for it.
Right.
Yeah.
Nice.
That's
cool.
That's wonderful. Boy. So,
it is.
When you were a kid, what scared you?
Everything.
What scares you now?
Everything.
Me too.
What scares me now is CNN, watching the news, everything in reality.
Yeah. I don't watch serial killers
or anything realistic. I write escape fiction. I do monsters and ghosts and vampires and werewolves. The atrocities of man scare me, how people can be so ignorant, so hateful towards one another. I mean, that really is scary. It's getting worse. I mean, we were, you know, this wonderful country where everybody blended together, and now we're all putting up walls and fences and standing apart from each other and pointing fingers. And it's terrible to see America that I love going down this route.
Right.
Yeah,
I agree.
Yeah,
I agree 100%. That's exactly how I feel. Yep, I agree. And you're
reality
right.
Reality scares me.
Life is far
reality,
scarier.
Yeah.
Than, you know, yeah, very much scarier than monsters.
Yeah, I want my horror to have supernatural elements, or it's not fun. It's just
yeah.
I agree.
Well, I was a monster kid at heart. I mean, when I was 9 years old, my first allowance, which was a whopping 50 cents, shows how old I am. I spent it on Famous Monsters and Filmland magazine because it had werewolves in the cover. So I was raised by monsters and vampires, and you know, I was a lonely kid in the country with no one to play with. So yeah, I kind of felt sympathy for the monsters. They were me. I was the outsider.
Yeah.
So Crota, I don't call it a horror novel. It's a monster novel. It was my tribute to that era growing up and watching monster movies, watching Frankenstein, the Wolfman, the Mummy.
Yeah.
Right,
oh, that's
right.
Nice. But speaking of monsters, let's talk about ghosts, because you do some paranormal investigating.
I do quite a bit. My novel Breed set in St. Augustine, Florida, which is America's oldest European settlement and very haunted.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody has stories up there. I've sat down with the mayor and the chief of police, and they all have wonderful ghost stories. And I wrote the book because I was up there one night, and I was messing around the Talamato Cemetery taking pictures around midnight. And this business next door left their gate open, so I went into the business and got up against the back fence of the cemetery and took some 35-millimeter pictures. In the one photo, there's a green beam of light hitting this grave in a place where there were no lights. And standing in the beam of light is a woman, and she's wearing an antique wedding dress with a half veil, the Spanish wedding dress.
Uh-huh.
You can see her, but you can see through her, and her face was like a corpse. I'm like, whoa.
Wow.
So I started asking around, and hundreds of people have seen this particular spirit, and they call her the bride. And she died a week before her wedding, and they buried her in her wedding gown. So right there, I started investigating St. Augustine heavily to the ghost stories and stuff. And I've had a lot of experiences up there and a lot of encounters. And it just kind of spurred the whole imagination because, you know, haunted places are much more fascinating than historic places. It's one thing to look at an old house, but it's another thing to look at a house that's got the ghost of a captain from the Civil War who occupies it.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
That's really unusual to actually see an apparition. That doesn't happen very often, but St. Augustine special.
The last time I was there, I actually got shushed by somebody who couldn't be seen, but it could very well be heard. We were in the Government House Museum on the second floor, and I was talking, pointing out a display to my wife, and really loud, it was a shh. So I stopped and got really embarrassed, and then started looking around. I was like, who did that? And we walked back to the museum. We were the only people there. It was Sunday at 9 o'clock in the morning. So I went downstairs to the counter, and this little elderly lady was there. And I was like, ma'am, I have a question. I said, was I talking too loud? And she's like, no. Why? I said, you didn't just shush me. And she's like, no. I said, okay, next question. Do you ever have anything weird happen here? And she got this wonderful little smile, looked at me. She goes, all the time, second floor.
Oh, great.
Shushed by a ghost.
That should totally go in your bio. Shushed by a ghost.
Yeah. That would be a good title.
It's Sunday morning. Shut the hell up.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Busy here.
Well, I was also caretaker at Greenwood Cemetery in Orlando for 8 years, and it's a 100-acre cemetery, dates back to the 1880s, got 80,000 burials, and it's considered the most haunted place in Orlando, in Central Florida, actually. And it wasn't unusual to have encounters, to see things. I had an apparition out of the corner of my eye. I was reading on a break, and this person walked up to me very angry and scared the tar out of me, or have, you know, things you couldn't see prank you. Take stuff out of your cart, set it on the ground when there's no way it could have fallen without you hearing it. But that was a common thing. It was just something we got used to.
Wow.
Right.
That's very cool.
So where did you first get interested in this? I think that on some level, interest in the unknown is kind of inherent. But what got you interested in it enough to go looking for it?
Childhood. I mean, I had a grandmother who probably could be best described as a Cherokee witch, and she used to tell me stories. And my aunt, you know, had a lot of folklore and stories. It had the collection of a wonderful series of books called Man, Myth, and Magic. They were the forbidden books that all us kids used to sneak peeks at. And just that type of thing with the family. The occult and the supernatural and ghost stories are all part of our lives growing up.
That's great.
Now, apparently, as well as writing under your name, Owl, going back, you also have ghostwritten a lot for Hollywood celebrities, it says. What can you tell us about that?
Well, I've done that several times. I did write a science fiction novel for a multi-Emmy award-winning actor. They flew me to New York, the big publisher, and I pitched the idea to him over a launch in New York to write this story, and he loved it. Mm-hmm. I got the job because he had read my story Grass Dancer when it came out, and he read it on an airplane and cried like a baby, and he was like, I want this guy to write my book. So it worked out. So it was kind of nerve-wracking, and I did this story, which I wish I could have had it under my name, so I turned down the opportunity to write another one for him because I was like, you know, it's fun to write, and I got paid really good, but if I'm going to do that kind of work, I want it to be under my name.
Yeah.
Right.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah, Alistair and I spent a while trying to guess who it might be. But,
yeah,
you
know, I know.
We'll never know. But
we'll
guessing is
know.
The most fun part. No. It got
well,
outrageous.
I saw it on TV one time, and it was kind of funny because he's holding the book. I mean, it's kind of strange seeing somebody holding a book that you wrote with his picture on it, and then they're doing autographs.
Oh, that would really be great. So, like, when, yeah,
now,
never mind.
As someone who's been doing this for a while, I'm always curious because I'm, you know, still relatively new, I guess, if, you know, 5 or 6 or somewhere under 10 years is new. But anyway, you've been doing this for a while. I'm curious what your thoughts are on today's publishing climate.
Well, you know, at first I didn't like where it was going because a lot of the bookstores are being shut down and, you know, the market's being flooded with, you know, some great books, but some really bad ones because everybody wants to be an actor, writer, musician, and people think they can be writers without doing their homework or without doing their practice or not having a good editor. Everybody needs an editor, including me. So I was kind of resentful of that. And when I did Tribal Screams, when I did a limited run, it was a self-publishing venture, and I never self-published, and I felt bad about it because I didn't even promote the book because I just didn't want to do it, and I didn't want to go small press because I had been always traditionally published in the larger publishing houses. And then I kind of recently I was like thinking in my neighborhood, a Books A Million closed down, which is a big bookstore. And suddenly I realized, I said, well, it's kind of stupid holding out for traditional publishers because I want to be back in bookstores when there are no bookstores. I said, I've got to adapt or I'm going to die out. You know, it's like, I'm going to be one of the dinosaurs because there are no bookstores. There's like one in Orlando still. Everything else is shut down. There used to be dozens of stores here.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah,
so you got to adapt to the situation. I mean, it's kind of like there are some great books being out there, and there are some great writers, and you know the ones who are new to the market. It's like anything. Do your homework. You know, pay your dues. I mean, get some practice in. Get some editorial advice. Talk to the old writers. Everybody's willing to help you.
Yeah.
Right.
That's
right,
so true.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It is. Yeah. And I think it's really cool that adapted with that and you rolled with the punches because, you know, nothing's ever going to stay the same. And it's really sad when you hear of someone who's, you know, been doing it for a long time and they just don't adapt. It's a shame, you know, because there's always going to be a new avenue for this. And so I'm glad that you know how to roll with the punches.
You've got to, but it breaks my heart to watch these bookstores shut down and see this wonderful literary culture we had with the corner bookstores and the mom and pop places going out of business.
Yeah,
right,
some of them are making a comeback now, and that's great. But our local Dark Delicacy had trouble, but it's moving, so it's still there. But
I hope
supposedly.
I've seen a new generation of kids, the young kids, like the 9 to 10-year-olds reading at an advanced level. I've seen a lot of really smart kids who absolutely love reading, so I hope they bring it back into the mainstream again, where people walk around
right.
You know, and you see them holding books all the time.
Yeah.
I agree.
Or Kindles would be okay, I guess.
Kindles
I can't
yeah.
get used to that, though.
Yeah. I always say
I've been reading 80s
writer,
horror novels lately.
I love e-books. Yeah, as a
mm-hmm.
writer, I love e-books because you know you make better money from e-books. So as a writer,
yes.
I like e-books. As a reader, though, I never really adapted. I have a Kindle, but I just prefer books.
Yeah,
I like books. I like
How
the smell of them. I like Kindle
mm-hmm.
because. You know, I didn't like a Kindle until I actually played with one and one of the Nook readers. And when I found out you could turn the page and scroll across, it looked like you were turning a real page. I said, okay, I can live with this. I mean, you know, as long as I can turn the page, I can get along with this. But I do like the experience of holding a book and the smell and going into an old library. That Kindle's never going to replace that.
No.
Right.
Alistair, you and I need new Kindles. Ours are like 10 years old.
It's true. In all fairness, my Kindle thing is like way, it's a dinosaur. It's horrible.
Yeah, I don't think they even
yeah.
work now.
I don't think
gasoline powered.
So I'm sure they've evolved into a much better thing than they once were. But anyway, before we run out of time, I want to ask a little bit more about Coyote Rage. When mm-hmm. when does it come out?
It comes out the first part of February. I just went through the proof pages and sent them back to the publisher. They're working on the cover now, so it should be the first or second week of February.
Nice.
Oh, okay, yeah, because it's not listed on Amazon yet, but it will be soon. So
very soon.
Watch for it. Yeah, good. Good, because I want to order it.
What would you say? Yes, I agree. What would you say if I asked you, what is it in Coyote Rage that you are most proud of?
I've got a chance to play with some humor. I got some great characters. I mean, I've got some wonderful shapeshifters, but I've got a talking mouse who's absolutely adorable. So I've got the fantasy elements that I usually don't do when I'm doing straight line horror. So you got the scare and you got the fears that my fan base is going to like. My readers have been with me for years, but I've got the humor, which usually only was in my short stories before. I've got you know, animated cannibal skeletons. I've got giant rolling heads. I had fun with it.
Oh,
I really
cool.
did.
You did. Oh, I can't wait
I
to
read
this.
More.
This is fantastic.
All right.
Absolutely.
And where can our listeners go to find out more about you? I know you're on Twitter. We just found you on Twitter. It was real easy because there's not a lot of Owl Going Backs on Twitter. So we're following you on Twitter. But
where can we find out more about you?
What was that?
On Twitter is Old Going Back. Because when I finally went on Twitter, there was somebody already using Owl Going Back, which I found strange.
Oh,
but a woman was using my name, so I couldn't even use it.
That's creepy.
And then Facebook took me years to get on Facebook because they didn't believe my name was real and they wanted me to scan my driver's license and I didn't have a scanner.
Ouch.
And I said, you guys gave a page to Sasquatch and I know he doesn't have a driver's license.
Yeah.
But I finally with the smartphones, I said, can I just take a picture of it and send it to you? And they're like, yeah. So 5 minutes later, I was finally on Facebook after fighting with them for 6 years.
Oh, geez. They're such Nazis.
It's awful.
Yeah. Oh,
do you have a website?
I do have a website, is owlgoingback.com, so I can be reached there. I can you can email me from that. I said I am on Facebook. I am on Twitter. I'm slowly being drawn kicking and screaming into the modern age because you know, this is all strange for me, this whole internet presence thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's as far as we've gone, too.
Yeah. Our next venture is Instagram. Everybody, that's all the rage. Everybody, you need to be on Instagram. I'm like, I barely got on Twitter. Come on. You know?
Yeah, exactly. We're still practicing. Right. Hey, are you working on another new book then?
What are you working on?
If you went on Instagram, my page would probably be like hashtag idiot because I know nothing about Instagram.
Neither do we. But you started another new book?
I'm doing the second one for the sequel to Coyote Rays, because it's going to be at least a trilogy. I've got three or four other books in various stages of completion. I keep juggling whether they're going to be a script or a book, or a script or a book, going back and forth. Mm-hmm. Some are the traditional scary stuff. So I'm always constantly doing stuff, which is why I never actually accomplish anything, because I keep jumping back and forth.
Uh-huh.
We're talking about agent nuts. I like to jump around. To me, writing's about proving yourself, and I want to prove myself in every aspect of writing. I've done magazines, poetry, news articles. I've done martial arts articles. I've done comic books, novels, children's books. I just like to jump around. Otherwise, I get really bored really fast.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
I understand that.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
Where can
I'm 10 pages in. Let's start another one. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Poetry, I've got I think one of the poems in the Tribal Stream, so that's another reason to buy that and have a cup of coffee with it.
Okay.
Nice, yes.
That sounds
good
like
to
a plan.
The last drop.
Yes.
Exactly.
All right. Ahead of aroma.
We're out of time, but we have loved having you. And for the listeners, Coyote Rage will be out the first or second week of February, and you can learn more at owlgoingback.com.
Owl, we hope you'll come back soon.
Yeah, we do. We'd love to have you back.
I would love to be back, guys. I had a blast. It was a lot of fun.
Oh, thanks.
Yeah,
we enjoyed it.
Hit us up when your next book comes out, and we'll happily reschedule you for another interview.
Before
it
comes out.
Thank you.
Yeah. Give us 6 months. Yeah. We fill up. Yeah.
And they're coming out from Independent Legions Publishing. Independent Legions Publishing is a website, too. So they'll give the exact date when they're coming out.
Excellent.
All right. Perfect.
Yeah. Keep us
in
mind.
You.
Okay.
Yes, Steve.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you for being on.
Thank you.
It was great meeting you. I'm looking forward to reading your work. And to the listeners, thank you, everybody, for listening. Until next week, we wish you haunted nights.
And sweet screams.
Thank you for listening.
Haunted Nights, live with Tamara Thorne and Alistair Cross.
Hi, it's Jamie, Progressive's Employee of the Month, 2 months in a row. Leave a message at the...
Hi, Jamie. It's me, Jamie. I just had a new idea for our song about the Name Your Price tool. So when it's like, tell us what you want to pay, hey, 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 and the trombone goes, blah, 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 and you say, we'll help you find coverage options to fit your budget. Then we just all do finger snaps while a choir goes, savings coming at ya, savings coming at ya. Yes? No? Maybe? Anyway, see you at practice tonight. I got new lyrics for the rap break.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hi, it's Jamie, Progressive number one, number two employee. Leave a message at the...
Hey, Jamie. It's me, Jamie. This is your daily pep talk. I know it's been rough going ever since people found out about your a cappella group, Mad Harmony, but you will bounce back. I mean, you're the guy always helping people find coverage options with the Name Your Price tool. It should be you giving me the pep talk. Now get out there, hit that high note, and take Mad Harmony all the way to nationals this year! Sorry, it's pitchy.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.